You are Locked On Jazz, your daily podcast on the Utah Jazz.
Part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
It is Locked On Jazz for the 12th of February. Moving up and down the standings, is it realistic? An interesting matchup of two pretty similar teams with the Jazz and the Heat. What's your optimum offense? Buyout candidates? And maybe a little fun with politics if I have time. Oh, I think that's a bad idea, but maybe. You'll see. It'll be funny. All coming up on today's edition of Locked On Jazz. Pow! How are you? I'm David Locke, radio voice of the Utah Jazz, Jazz NBA insider. This is Locked On Jazz on your daily podcast on the Utah Jazz, giving you insight, expertise, geeky numbers, and hopefully making it way more fun to be a Jazz fan. I hope you're doing great. I want to share a happy birthday wish out to American Downhiller, Steve Nyman, and also, Sundance, Utah native. I'll tell a quick story. So, you know, the kids have grown up with me doing this job or not to impress. They're no different than the other kids. They're not too impressed by dad. I think they like dad, but they're not too impressed by dad. Except for I found out a few years ago that American U.S. ski teamers, Steve Nyman, Ted Ligety, and Brandenburg at the time were all actually used to drive from one World Cup event to the other and listen to Locked On Jazz because Steve sent me an email. Well, both my kids are ski racers. So this actually made, like, this was cool. This actually trumped any other really cool experience I've ever had in my life that, like, oh, dad just called Kobe's last game, no big deal. Oh my gosh, World Cup ski racers listen to dad's podcast in Europe. That's so cool. Steve Nyman, just one of the best dudes around, proceeded to then send my kids his bibs, race bibs from some of his World Cup races. That's like the ultimate. It's like a game-worn jersey, right? It's like the coolest ever. Both of them have them up in their rooms and since Steve's been amazing, he's met with my son a few times and just talked to him about racing and things like that. But, so happy birthday to Steve Nyman, the one person along with Park City's Ted Ligety, who, actually at some point, made it so that actually dad was semi cool. So each kid has their own thing. Happy birthday to Steve. Hope it's going good. And, ski fast, ski hard. All right. There's a lot of questions I'm getting right now. Now that the Jazz have won three in a row and the world isn't coming to an end, of like, can the Jazz move up the standings, et cetera. So I wanted to look at that today. Here's the general premise I have for you that I'm going, or the thesis that I'm going to try to prove. Moving up is, and moving in general, I think is going to be incredibly difficult. And the reason is everybody's so good. So, right now, we're sitting at 35-18. So we've got 29 games left. If we go 20-9, which is basically what we've done all year long, we go win 55 games, I'm not sure that moves us anywhere. And the reason I say that is because if you look at the standings as they sit today, even after the Clipper lost last night, which was nice the Clippers to do, and they might just lose one more time before the break, you know, we're a game and a half behind the Clippers for three, and we're 2.5 behind the Nuggets for two. Credit to Denver. So if we were going to catch Denver, who were down in the season series two games to one, and would have to beat them the next time, they have to go 18. If we go 20-9, they have to go 18-11. That could happen, but it's not actually, and actually that wouldn't even get it done. They've got to go 17-12 at some point. You know, that team who's won 8 of 10 and won 38 of 54 has to really hit the skids. And that these teams are all so good, it seems rather unlikely that they're going to hit the skids. I'm a little worried about the Rockets. I think, you know, had the Rockhead Bogey not hitting that shot, all of a sudden the Rockets have won 3 of 4 with this small lineup, with the one loss being Russell not playing against Phoenix. But again, if you are sitting Russell on some back-to-backs and you have back-to-backs late and you lose when Russell doesn't play, well, then that's a problem. Catching the Clippers, you know, is getting easier because it's one in the loss column, but we're going to look at it and I'll look at the projections with you, but there's just not that many games, and there's not that much of a range of what these teams are going to do. They're all so good that teams just aren't, I just don't think we're going to see these teams play, you know, in a different manner than they're playing right now. I mean, obviously, if somebody decides to go have their, you know, to fall apart, then that's a totally different situation. But I don't see that happening. So here's how the West projects according to ESPN. They have the Jazz finishing at 19-10 the rest of the way to get to 54 wins. So they have the Lakers at 61 and running away with it. Hard to disagree with it. And then beating the Lakers when they're the home seed is going to be brutal. Clippers at 56, Denver at 55, Utah at 54, Houston at 52, Dallas at 50, and OKC at 47. They actually have, and then the interesting one is the last race, they have Portland with Dame making the playoffs. So that's ESPN's system. You know, seven of these teams are about 100% of making the playoffs. And the question is where you're going to get seeded. So that has us with the inevitable 5-4 matchup, but with home court against Houston. You go to 538. They project the Lakers with 60, so one off. The Clippers with 56, the exact same. The Nuggets with 56, one up. The Rockets with 54 and us at 53. So they have us going 18-11 the rest of the way. You could probably start to quibble with that, but we have not been playing great recently, and they weigh recent play. They have the Mavericks slipping all the way to 48. The Thunder at 47. I mean, these, and then they have the Blazers making the playoffs also, but tied with the Pelicans. They actually still have the Pelicans as most likely. Pelicans win again last night. Basketball Reference, who actually uses a little bit of a different sequence of things, projects the Lakers at 60. I mean, so they're just, is the models are pretty similar here, right? Lakers 61, 60, 60. Clippers at 55. Basketball Reference has always been known for being lower. Denver at 54. Utah at 52.5 or 53, right kind of where we're talking. Rockets at 51. Dallas at 50. Oklahoma City at 48. And then they have Portland making the playoffs over Memphis instead of New Orleans. Dame makes the playoffs. That's pretty awesome. The point on this is that while this is certainly tight, right? 55, 54, 53, 56, 56, 53. That last one's not that tight. 56, 55, 54. For the Jazz to go get the two seed, it certainly looks like it's going to take 57 wins. Well, now all of a sudden, the rest of the way, you're going 22-7. And that's just to get to 57. That seems awfully high. We literally have to be flawless. Nothing would go wrong. We've had one significant injury and nothing else from the season with Conley. And the chances of the Clippers, the Nuggets, the Rockets fading feels pretty unlikely. I mean, there's no sign. Like, Denver's had every injury they possibly could have. The Clippers are doing all their load management stuff and just got deeper. Houston, actually, I think, really just got way better. When we prepped for that game and suddenly did the research on the impact Capella was having, I thought it was pretty stunning. I mean, even when you look at, like, best and worst on these teams, they're all very similar. So it gets interesting. Now, the Jazz close with Denver on the final night of the season. The final home game before that is April 7th against the Clippers. So there's some things that could be on the line there. We open up with five straight home games, and then I think we play even the rest of the way. Then I think we play, you know, about as many home-to-road games as there are. San Antonio, Houston, Phoenix, Boston, Washington. At Cleveland, at New York, at Boston, at Detroit. I mean, we got to come out gangbusters on the backside of this break and try to push that thing up a little bit and see, you know, obviously turned ankle here or there by anyone can have an impact, but that's not my point. My point is that it's going to be difficult to move because no one's going 14-14. Today's show brought to you by the store at 6200 South and 20th East. I will be there today picking up the Clifford Egg, so do not buy them out before I get there. They're also located down at the Gateway, right across from the Children's Museum in the Gateway. They've got kind of an urban setting store. I like that store. Yeah, it does. It feels very city-ish, kind of crammed in there. Everything you need. Great hot meals for lunch. As well as kind of, they have a little sushi place, not that's, you know, pre-made. They've got all your kombucha and your nitro, your cold brews. If you want to grab that, actually use it kind of as a coffee shop. Plus it's got every single one of your grocery items you need. It does. It feels like one of those cool New York urban grocery stores downtown. So if you're downtown, check it out right across from Children's Museum. 6200 South 20th East feels a little bit more like that community grocery store. Utah's own products all throughout, everywhere you go. You got the high school kids working the stands, helping the older folks out with their groceries, giving you that feeling of being a part of something. It's absolutely fabulous. It's the store at 6200 South and 20th East. For those of you that were intrigued by the Calm app, it's make sure you go get your, you can go to calm.com/LockedOnNBA and you can it's just Locked On. Calm.com/LockedOn. You get your 40% off there. So make sure you check that out. It'll say Locked On NFL when you get there. All right, Miami today is fascinating. Two great coaches. So listen to some, this is kind of a numbers geek prep to the game, but and it's two teams that play really hard. They play, they're more physical. They probably play a little harder. There's some interesting aspects of this game. You can choose what you want. So both teams are 35-18. The Jazz have the 7th best differential. They have the 8th best. So they're basically the same. The Jazz offense is 9th. Theirs is 8th. Basically the same. Their defense, the Jazz is 8th. The Heat is 12th. Basically the same. Okay, it's crazy. Style of play. The Jazz play the most half-court possessions. Miami plays the second most. The Jazz, in turn, play the third fewest transition possessions. Other things would be putbacks and things like that. Miami plays the fourth fewest. So, similar half-court teams, both great half-court execution, both the exact same rating, basically. Both brilliantly coached. They're much better in transition than we are. That's where why they look a little bit better on things. We're the number one three-point shooting team in the league. They're the number two. We take the 12th most shots from three. They take the 9th. Like, we're the same. We're the 4th best team defending the three. They're the best team in the NBA defending the three. Here's the one thing where it changes. They're 29th in the league in three-pointers allowed. Really strange, actually. Really surprised by that. But otherwise, I mean, it's crazy. Effective field goal percentage. Jazz are 2nd, Heat are 4th. Turnover rate. Jazz are 22nd, Heat are 21st. Offensive rebounding, 25 versus 19. That's basically the same, actually. It's like it would take like 100 opportunities for that difference to show up. Fouling. We're the 8th best at not fouling. They're the best at not fouling. Okay? Defensive effective field goal percentage. We're 6th, they're 10th. We don't force turnovers, they don't force turnovers. We don't allow offensive rebounds. They don't allow offensive rebounds. I mean, like, stunningly similar. They get to the free throw line the most earlier. I said it backwards. They foul a little bit more defensively because they're overly aggressive than we are. Than we foul. They're 18th in the league in fouling. We're 8th. But, like, defensive rebounding rates are the exact same. Turnover rates, exact same. Defensive effective field goal percentage, exact same. Offensive free throw rate, virtually the same. They go to the line a little bit more. Offensive rebounding rate, exact same. Turnover, exact same. Effective field goal percentage, exact same. It's crazy. It's really an interesting, and I'm trying to figure out why. Because I'm not sure I think the teams are that similar. Certainly the core at the middle of the teams are very different. Bam Adebayo and Rudy Gobert. Bam Adebayo is out of the Nikola Jokic type of center now. He's third on their team in assists at 5. He plays out of that elbow, passes. They run massive cutters all the time. They've got Duncan Robinson and Kendrick Nunn just bombing threes. Tyler Hero. They're a little, I would say they're a little deeper than we are. They have Jimmy Butler as kind of a bona fide star. We have emerging stars. They've got Dragic and Conley, I guess, could be similar. Just kind of where they are in their careers and who they are. I mean, our Butler's kind of, the way they're using Butler is the way we use Joe Ingles. Except for the fact that he can drop 20 every night, which Joe, sorry, can't quite do. Joe will tell me otherwise, but no, actually Joe will not. But really, it's prepping for this game last night was fascinating. The other one that's interesting on Miami is when you kind of dig into some of their lineups and their on-off stuff, they just have the ability to throw so many different styles out there. So when you look at their on-off, Duncan Robinson is their best on-off player on the roster, which is crazy. It's just such a statement to gravity. And it's a backdoor conversation I had with Quinn Snyder and assistant coach Vince LaGarza of why on my numbers system are players like Duncan Robinson and Rudy Gobert and Jared Allen and Rashawn Holmes and J.J. Redick and Davis Bertans showing up as so incredibly valuable. And the answer was that because the league is 100% committed to taking away the three and the rim, that when you actually have a player that's so good that they can do it, it's pretty impressive. And it makes a bigger impact than it would otherwise because, frankly, you can take away a shooter, but Duncan Robinson, despite starting his career at Williams and then going to Michigan and being an Ivy, basically a, you know, Division III basketball player at one point in his career, his shooting is so elite and his size is, he's 6'7", so he can get that shot off. It just alters the game. Jimmy Butler is their other by far best plus minus player. I mean, he's just been terrific for him. So in that sense, he's their Joe Ingles, but he can drop 20. He's really struggling with his shot. Over the last 10 games, he's shooting 17% from three. The thing he does is he goes to the free throw line at a higher rate than just about anybody in the league. You got to keep him off the glass. And he doesn't turn it over. They don't turn it over when he's on the floor, interestingly. So you look at their plus minus. The only players that actually aren't very good in plus minus are Derek Jones Jr. and Tyler Hero. They're both pretty terrible. In turn, they've also then, you know, added Jay Crowder and Andre Iguodala to their roster to give them, you know, stunningly even more depth in their 113-101 win over Golden State. These guys play so hard that they played 9 guys. And Tyler Hero's out and didn't play, which probably makes them better right now, just Tyler Hero being a rookie. It just isn't quite there. And then the other aspect, which we don't entirely know about them yet because Iguodala and Crowder is this kind of amazing versatility they can throw out there. So they just have so many different lineups. When Derek Jones comes in, who is one of their least good plus-minus players, they go to the zone. And they use the zone a lot. See, that's the other thing that's interesting. Despite all these statistics being the same, like, they play a ton of zone. We don't do that. Like, so defensively, the principles are very different. Maybe offensively, some of the principles are the same. But it's interesting. Their top lineups are all great. Their number one lineup's plus 12. Their number two lineup's plus 27. Their number three lineup is plus 18. Their only lineups that aren't very good, I don't know that we're going to ever see anymore. So they were minus 19 when Tyler Hero was on with Dragic, Jones, and Olynyk in Adebayo. I don't know we're seeing that anymore because of Jay and Iguodala. They were minus 18 when it was Dragic, Nunn, Butler, Myers, Leonard, and Adebayo. I'm not sure we're seeing that anymore now that they have Iguodala and they have Crowder. So they're really interesting. A lot of people think that they're ready to make that push and to break through. Today's show is brought to you part by Homie. You know, when you think about who Homie was when we kind of first started this and had them advertising on the show, Homie was this advertising or this real estate group that was kind of coming out here to change the world, disrupt the marketplace, do what, frankly, you know, I heard one of the gubernatorial candidates talking about that, like, Homie is what Utah entrepreneurship is all about. It's about disruption and changing things and innovation. Well, now Homie just keeps growing and growing and growing. And they're entering into Arizona. They're entering into Nevada. We're seeing this all originate out of Utah. Why? Because they've saved over $50 million of people's commissions. Homie's helped thousands of buyers and sellers last year with over $1 billion of real estate transactions. In fact, an academic study out of BYU showed that they're selling homes for more money and 8 days faster over the past 3 years. So they're totally disrupting the marketplace. It's pretty cool. And they're saving people upwards of about $10,000 per transaction. That's what Homie's all about. Text LOCK to 88588. That's LOCK to 88588. And find out more and have an experienced local Homie agent help you every step of the way. If you're new to Homie, how they do this is because they don't pay the traditional 6% commission that is part of real estate. Instead, there's a set price when you're selling your home. And when you buy your home with Homie, they try to work their way to get you $5,000 back on the deal. Find out more by texting LOCK, L-O-C-K-E, to 88588. Every now and then I get like a little, you know, burn my saddle of where I'm trying to figure something out or I want to know something. So here's just for interest, the one that I want to share with you that I've been working on recently. What is the optimum offense in the NBA? Here's why. If we go to 2009, 2010, the best offense in the league was the Phoenix Suns. They were pretty radical at 114 points per 100 possessions. The next best was Atlanta at 111. It seemed unlikely. If we go back, let's go back to 2001, 2002, all the way back. Dallas Mavericks played, so we're 20 years ago. We'll do this in 2-3 year increments. Dallas was playing a smaller ball. They were doing some interesting things. They were a 110. Let's jump ahead 3 years, 2004, 2005. Phoenix kind of revolutionized the game, was playing at a 112.7, 113 offensive rating. This is points per 100 possessions. So the game was being changed. Phoenix, let's go 3 years ahead, 2007, 2008. Now the number drops. The Jazz are actually the number one offensive team in the league then at 112. Phoenix is right with them. Now Jazz are playing a little different style, but they're playing with Boozer and Darren and a great point guard. 2010, 2011, that it's still hovering right around the same number. Denver's now the number one team at a 112. So we're not making, we're changing, we're doing a lot of things. Nothing's moving. 2013, 14, it slips. It goes backwards to 111. The Clippers with Chris Paul and Blake Griffin is the best offensive team in the league. Let's go to 2016, 17, jumping another 3 years ahead. Now all of a sudden there's this spike. And the spike actually happens the year before in 15-16 from the Warriors. They begin to touch on it. And listen to this progression we have. So the Warriors have the best offense in the league at 113.5, okay? Oklahoma City with Durant and Westbrook and maybe even Harden at that point are at 112. They're kind of blowing the rest of the league away. The Warriors are at 114, Thunder at 112, Cavaliers, LeBron are 110, but the rest of the league's not up there. Now we're going to go year by year. All of a sudden, the Warriors spike. They go from 112 to 114.8, and Houston follows with Harden. So now all of a sudden, the Warriors are basically at 115. The Rockets are at 114. The Cavaliers are at 113. Denver's at 112. Like, these would have led the league the year before. In 1 year, the Warriors, like, exposed the world to spacing. We go to 2017-18. And the Rockets now become the best offensive team. Still at 114. The Raptors jump in there. The Warriors are still at 113. Minnesota with Karl Anthony Towns playing differently is in there. 2018-19, the Warriors take it last year. The last year of Durant last year of Durant, one more notch up to 115, and the Rockets come with him. We're now at the historically greatest offense of all time at 115. Now we go to this year, all of a sudden it's 116, and it's the Dallas Mavericks. They're 3 points better than the rest of the league, actually. So the question is, what's the optimum offense? Like, where can we go? We've driven this thing. If we go back to where we started, right? 2001, we've gone from 110 to 116 in 20 years. But what's interesting really about it is if you, other than the Phoenix Suns, who kind of blew the thing, kind of exposed everyone to where we were going, in the middle of 12-13 and that the Heatles, we were still at 111. So in the last 8 years, 7 years, we've gone from 111 to 116. Where are we going? What's now, to some extent, Dallas is an outlier. Dallas is 3 points better than the rest of the league in offense. People should be like looking at what Dallas is doing. Dallas is actually breaking the game offensively more so than just about anyone. So anyway, my latest kind of thing, and I've been asking all the coaches, is like, have you thought about, and they, most of them haven't because they're worrying about game to game, what the optimum offense in this league could be? Like, where could we go? And it's interesting to me that Dallas, who honestly, like, it's, they're not that wowing, is doing it. It leads me to believe it. Like, we might be at a 118. Now, here gets the next part. If you take the last 15 games, Toronto's at 118.9, Dallas is at 118.4, Portland's at 117, Utah's at 117, Lakers are at 117. Okay, that's the last 15 games. Not a big enough sample size, but I feel as though right now I can go to kind of any two-month stretch of the league. So let me do December 1st to, you know, if I do December 1st to February 1st, right? It's 2 years, or 2 months, excuse me, not 2 years, okay? I think I will end up with a team that is at a 120. I am, Portland Trailblazers. For that, that's interesting. They only played 10. That can't be right. Something's wrong here. They only played 10 games. Oh, I know why. Never mind. Let me fix it. There. So that 20-game stretch, Portland's at a 116. Nothing crazy. I keep seeing these 20-game stretches, like the Jazz are, frankly, in one, right? If you take from the day in which we added Jordan Clarkson to today, which is a 24-game stretch, our offensive rating is a 118.7. Okay, I just told you 116 is the best ever. We're actually 2 points better than the rest of the league. Honestly, I kind of feel the same way I do about us, about Dallas. Like, I don't look at us and say, that's the greatest offensive team that's ever been created. Our star players yet to really be that efficient. We've got great shooting, but maybe that's all it is now. Right? Dallas takes the like third or fourth most amount of threes in the league, and or second most amount of threes in the league, and makes a lot of them. Maybe that's all it is. But there's something going on here when I can go grab these 20-game stretches around the league all the time and find teams that are at 119. Portland's there right now. Like, if I go, that's a 25-game stretch or 23 for the Jazz, but if I just move that a little bit forward, I think I can end up with, like, so now I'm at 20 games. I got five teams at 117. At some point, those 117, 5 games, 15-game stretches keep rolling and keep going. It's pretty interesting. At least that's interesting to me. You can decide. Buyout market, I promised that. I also promised politics jokes, but we won't do it. I actually wanted to take political candidates to players or teams. Like, so Joe Biden, like, keeps getting to play in the NBA. He's like 0-100. Right? Or like, if he's a European soccer league team, they keep promoting him for no reason. I have my Hillary Clinton European Soccer League analogy, but I can't do it on the air. Mo Harkless in the Knicks is a potential buyout candidate for the Knicks, who's actually kind of interesting to me. We could slide him in at the four. He's not a good shooter, which is the problem. It's why the it's why the Clippers got rid of him. But if we end up playing Paul George, Kawhi Leonard, Lou Williams, and they have Patrick Beverley on the floor, and they slide someone to a four on our bench units, George Niang is now guarding Paul George. That seems problematic. Tristan Thompson. Here are the top 10, according to the Ringer, top 10 buyout candidates. Dan Devine did this. He does great work. Congratulations to everybody at the Ringer, Bill Simmons, for building something in the latest purchase. That's really awesome. I'm so excited. Bill Simmons has changed the world, allowed the rest of us to do what we do. I've never met him, never talked to him for whatever reason, and a huge admiration. Tristan Thompson. I don't think the Jazz are interested. Mo Harkless is interesting, right? Like, he's 26 years old. He's not a great shooter. He's not terrible. He's 6'7 with a 7'2 wingspan. Like, I want athletes who can shoot. All right, you know, athletes who can shoot are all-stars. Right now, we have shooters that are non-athletes. It might be nice to have that athletic. So Mo Harkless is interesting to me. Reggie Jackson is not. Deion Waiters and J.R. Smith are not. Amon Shumpert is not. He's 6'5", 217. My convincing thing on him is because he can't shoot, we decide he's a defensive player, and I'm not sure he actually is. Evan Turner is not interesting. Isaiah Thomas is not particularly interesting. Tyler Johnson and Courtney Lee are both buyout candidates. Tyler Johnson's already been bought out. I actually have always really, really liked Tyler Johnson. I don't think we need him because we have Jordan Clarkson, and I don't know how he would play, but he's actually a player I've always sort of liked. Markieff Morris in Detroit. Tiny bit of interest there. He kind of could fit a big four, small five if we have to against Houston, if that's really our first playoff matchup. If you're starting to look specifically at matchups, he could be a little interesting in that regard. Taj Gibson of the Knicks, who I've always had a little bit of a concern about because he uses so many possessions and everyone thinks of him just a defensive player, and he's probably a little older and slower, and I haven't watched him this year because he's on the Knicks. But that would be another one you could probably slide four or five, be a little interesting. John Henson of the Pistons, just acquired, is one who's always been long and lanky and seems like he'd be a good backup to Rudy, but frankly has never, like, why does he keep bouncing around everyone? I haven't watched him enough to know, but that would be a little disconcerting. I don't think Bobby Portis will get bought out. He's interesting only in the sense that he can stretch as a five and a shooter. So those are the buyout market guys. None of those really move the meter a tremendous amount, but there are at least some interesting names in there. All right, that is today's show. Have a great one. Is Amy Klobuchar, Nikola Jokic, sneakily snuck up on all of us and became the star without us realizing it? I don't know. That's kind of what I was joking about politically. Is Joe Biden actually Andrew Wiggins, like number one pick, anointed, and yet actually never? That was what I was going to have fun with. It's not very good. See.